Hello and welcome to the HMEB podcast. It's a big episode today, episode 50. That's right, we've done 50 episodes. So a good little milestone there. I'm your host, David Cuff, the executive editor of HME Business, your source for news, trends, and insights into the home medical equipment industry. Brace yourselves. The pandemic is going away, but not the patient demand. If anything, you can expect more patient demands and a broader set of needs from your clients and referral partners. Now, the big question, are you ready? To answer that question, we have the founder and CEO of the compliance team, Sandy Canale. She's an expert on workflows and operational procedures at HME businesses and other post-acute providers. And she's seeing some serious pent-up demand and demands in the marketplace. She joins us to talk about those issues. Sandy, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How about yourself?
I'm doing fantastic. Thanks for joining us on a big milestone episode. I appreciate it.
Well, and congratulations on number 50.
Yeah, crazy. These things are creeping up on me. It's kind of like age.
I was going to say, okay, then that makes me 50 today.
No. let's take it. All right. Well, let's dive in, Sandy. So we're seeing some changes here, and obviously we've had some big changes starting March 2020, but what are the factors changing and expanding the needs of chronic care, of the chronic care population that, you know, HME providers serve?
Well, one of the reasons we wanted to talk about this today is because certainly the population that HMEs serve are indeed that chronic care population. So I started thinking about, you know, how has COVID and the pandemic impacted not only their day-to-day lives, but their healthcare needs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And certainly one of the things that has caused a disruption during the pandemic is their physical activity or lack thereof, their sleep, their stress and mental health. And of course, a big one is access to their medications and access to normal healthcare visits.
Yeah.
Now, interestingly enough, though, you know, for the most part, it's been a negative impact. But conversely, some of the environmental risk factors that affect folks that have asthma and respiratory conditions that are so sensitive to air pollution, they actually may have improved some of their symptoms because they haven't been out and about, which I thought was an interesting point.
Yeah. And that's interesting too, because you mentioned activity, and that's a weird one because I also know that like with long-term oxygen therapy patients, they've been saying that increased ambulation is good for their care. So I imagine there's a lot of give and take within these factors.
Exactly. And, you know, I think the key takeaway is that the pandemic and the effects of that pandemic are more far reaching, I think, than what you actually think it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I imagine a lot of people are kind of like, feeling that this whole pandemic thing has kind of blindsided them, and they're, you know, and now we're starting to come out of it, and, you know, they're trying to get their legs underneath them. How do providers assess how things have changed for them? You know, because I imagine that it varies from provider to provider. What do they do to kind of to get a good level set on, you know, what is the new lay of the land, I guess?
Exactly. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we want the HME provider to offer solutions for this. And during the pandemic, many of them have had to change their processes. Yeah. And the way that they operate and serve their patients. So today I'm going to ask, what's their takeaway during the pandemic in their business model change? there are benefits of that change. Maybe the patient enjoyed the follow-up calls that they did that brought them closer to the provider. Whereas they didn't do as many of those before because they were doing more deliveries. What I think they all need to do is survey their patients to see what changes they want to keep that they made during the pandemic. You can't automatically think that everything was bad or everything is not then needed in the move forward.
So they
really need to evaluate in moving forward with their business model.
Because I imagine some of these, I would hope some of these changes have been positive.
Exactly. And, you know, the key is with these increased healthcare needs, they really need to assess what they did, assess where they're at now, and how they can build these increased demands into their day-to-day practices.
Got it. So can you give me some sort of qualitative examples of, the increasing or changing needs among, the chronic care population?
Sure. And we'll get to that. But let me cite some statistics.
Sure thing.
In June 2020, about 55% of adults living with multiple chronic conditions reported delays or avoidance of medical care, which was attributed to the pandemic.
That's huge.
It is huge. And in another survey, 69% reported that COVID-19 affected their ability to manage their chronic conditions. So I think it's key to also look at past pandemics and data that is out there with regard to whether it's other countries or it really doesn't matter, but it's all about chronic disease can be anticipated to be significant drivers of demand post-pandemic with things like management of diabetes, with COPD, and of course, return of elective surgery. So, you know, again, looking at past pandemics, currently 6 in 10 adults in the U.S. have at least one chronic disease, and the CDC says 4 in 10 have 2 or more. Obviously, in our line of work in the HME industry, this is our population.
Absolutely.
And, you know, the safety protocols instituted slowed the spread with non-emergency routine care being put off for months really lead to the fact that they really need the providers to step up their game now.
Got it. So the net here is that the numbers argue and history argues in favor of some pent-up demand.
Exactly.
So can you give me some sort of qualitative examples of what that demand might look like?
Exactly. And, you know, it all makes sense. If you look at what researchers are finding and what I would look at in assessing what the needs are, it goes hand in hand with including more virtual care, at-home prescription delivery, remote monitoring. You know, there's a lot of devices now in the HME industry that are directly related to remote monitoring.
Absolutely.
Digital diagnostics with support and certainly applications for education, behavior modification, and that social support. It's all about expanding your model to maybe add some of these things. It can be done, and I believe that truly is going to be the future. And, you know, as I always say, the future is here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, and you know, I know it's really funny is, you know, we, I'm sure it's the perennial, kvetch in the post-acute world, right? That this segment of healthcare is totally undervalued and unrecognized, and really it is kind of the epicenter for some of the really momentous changes that are happening in the way healthcare is provisioned when it comes to all that, like remote patient monitoring and self-management and all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
Man, that's just wild. So, okay. So we've got some statistics, we've got some examples. We know that there's going to be not only pent up demand, but there's going to be, you know, changes, wrapped around that pent up demand. So how do HME providers position their businesses to meet these sort of increasing and changing needs? What do they do?
So I believe there needs to be an expansive model for their patients. So let's use diabetes as an example. Certainly as an accreditor, everything is directly related to product lines and product categories. So if you look at diabetes more as a hub type model than just diabetic supplies, the first thing that comes to my mind is if you want to increase your number of referrals, going to the physician saying, we now can do this for your diabetic patients, add products like diabetic shoes, add insulin pumps, do more follow-up, ask things like, and this is not typical of a DME or HME to do if they're basically calling themselves diabetic supply people, ask things of the patient when they saw their primary care doctor last. Have they filled their prescriptions? Are they taking it as ordered? And again, this is all around, okay, maybe they're getting the supplies, maybe, you know, are we asking the questions with, okay, is your glucometer still working effectively? You know, again, are you testing at the right times? And are you doing the medications and following up with your physician? Because it's directly tied, it's all connected to what the DME provider, you know, gives to the patient. Obviously, if they're testing and they're not taking their other medications, well, guess what? The physician that is prescribing the diabetic supplies or the shoes or the insulin pumps is interested in the outcome.
Yeah.
And you can be part of the solution of asking those additional questions as you fill the order for the diabetic supplies or the shoes or whatever. It goes hand in hand. You want that patient to have a good outcome, so you can then go to Dr. Jones and talk about how you've helped Mrs. McGillicuddy take care and better manage her diabetes.
Yeah, it's interesting because it, you know, we've talked about the role of HME providers in outcomes-oriented healthcare. And it seems like now it's really happening. Like now there's a real onus on providers to start facilitating that.
I agree. And, you know, diabetes was an example, certainly on the respiratory side with asthma and COPD.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with nebulizer treatments, with, you know, everything else with respiratory, can they add products there? Maybe they didn't do NEPs. Can they add that? Do they want to add CPAP, you know, or oxygen? We, you know, BiPAP, we talked about, you know, during COVID having difficulty with not only stress, but sleep. So I imagine coming out of this, we're going to have more people that have sleep issues, where perhaps CPAP can help.
Mm-hmm.
So it does directly influence what the DME and HME provider does on a daily basis. They just need to recognize it as it relates to their individual businesses and what they can do to rise to the occasion by not only talking with their patients more, but reporting that to the prescribers so that they're the ones that are going to get the scripts as opposed to the DME down the street that's doing it.
Yeah. Hey, you know, I weird tangent alert, but it's definitely related. And I think that you'd be a really interesting person to answer this, given your role as both an accreditation expert and, as a lot of our readers know, you're an RN as well. So what I'm curious about is, during this whole COVID thing, we saw not only, you know, obviously providers were fulfilling their role as people, you know, helping people with, you know, businesses helping people with chronic conditions. But we saw, in the case of respiratory, we saw acute care being provisioned in the home, and where they were like, we need to free up beds. This is a COVID patient. Let's put them on a concentrator or like PAP therapy in their home, and we'll monitor them. And this is part of their COVID treatment. So it was acute care. It wasn't chronic care. Do you think that's going to happen more in, you know, years to come, that the referral isn't just going to be, you know, a physician dealing with a chronic issue, but maybe somebody relying on the provider to assist in sort of that whole, what do they call it? The hospital in a home kind of scenario.
Right, exactly. I think certainly an increase in telemedicine, telehealth, whatever you want to call it, that's number one. Number two, I do believe that more and more things will be accomplished in the home. The home care model, we've proven that we can expand it and do it well. And, you know, chances are, to your point, that's going to continue.
Man,
so I agree with you that home care certainly is where things are going for, we'll call it post-acute, but it's like semi-acute, right?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, quasi-acute.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. I don't think that's a term really, but
no.
we just created it.
Let's do it. We created a whole niche of home care in episode 50.
Right. You're going to do semi-acute care.
Yes, semi-acute. I love it. Okay. So now let's talk about this from your role as somebody who, you know, heads up an accrediting organization. What does all this mean in terms of, you know, policies and procedures and accreditation? Because obviously, if, you know, that's, I would imagine, this changing way of doing things is going to change the policies and procedures that you guys are expecting, providers to follow, whether they're demi-post or working with third-party insurance or whatever.
Exactly. And certainly anybody that adds product or changes their model, we want to see what the new policy and procedure is. But even more importantly, they can write a procedure. We then need to verify and validate that the actual process they're performing matches that policy and procedure. So I think in this evolution of care and changes in models, that's where we may discover when we're on site and we're verifying that, oh, okay, something has changed. Either the process has changed and they didn't write the policy and procedure to match it, or they changed the policy and procedure and didn't change the process. Yeah. So we look at it both ways because it is important to give them that feedback that, okay, you're telling me that you're doing it this way And when we interview staff and we observe, you're not actually doing it that way. So we, you know, again, it's that third party validation, not only of quality and safety and all the things that an accreditor looks at, but day-to-day practices.
Does CMS play a role in this? Like, does CMS look at the way things are changing with DMEPOS providers and say, oh, well, we expect, you know, policies and procedures to, you know, be this now? Or is that something that comes more from you guys? This is where I'm not quite clear.
Okay. So the answer is with CMS, no. That really isn't on their radar.
So they're really relying on you guys.
Exactly. Gotcha. It's all about the accreditation organization. So some of the things, let's revisit the rest of that last question with the other thing that we would ensure is that the staff is trained for those additional products and the change in model. So it's not just about the paper and the documentation. It's about the hands-on competency of their staff.
Got it.
All right. Now, some, if somebody added a respiratory item like oxygen, or they added CPAP or whatever, the other thing that the accreditor may do over and above looking at a policy and procedure and training is they may actually do an on-site visit as a follow-up because of the change in model.
So Sandy, this all sounds like we're arriving at a term that you've mentioned before, and that is the value-based HME. And I was wondering if you could kind of you know, go into that descriptor a little bit. Who is the value-based HME?
Sure. So I believe I look at value-based a couple different ways. I think most people just equate it to pay for performance. So if there's not additional dollars in the mix, then why do it? So let's talk about that. I see value-based as your company, your HME, DME, whatever you refer to yourself as, is bringing more value to the patient, to the community, and to the prescriber, because it's all about positive results, positive outcomes. And that's where you can link value-based to that outcome. If you're doing more follow-up calls than your competition, and you can show that you have higher satisfaction, that your staff is better trained, and you manage your equipment better because you have causing less breakdown, that is value. That is additional value that you can show to get more prescribers. And maybe the payer, if it's Medicare or whatever, isn't going to pay you anymore, but you're going to get more orders from the prescribers because they're going to see you as a value-added provider as part of the team, not just an equipment provider. That's what it's about. It's about additional services that result in better patient outcomes.
Okay. Well, Sandy, this has been tremendous stuff. If providers want to find out more about how you can help them meet these needs, how can they reach out to you and the compliance team?
Well, our URL is thecomplianceteam.org. Or you could call us here at 215-654-9110. I would love to hear from you. You could send me an email at S as in Sandra, Canally, C-A-N-A-L-L-Y, at thecomplianceteam.org. And certainly, again, you are a DME HME providing these valuable services to your community. Get recognized for doing that as a community leader, and we can help you with that. Thank you.
All right. Well, Sandy, thanks so much for sharing your time and information. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much.
Again, if you want to learn more about the Compliance Team, you can check them out at thecomplianceteam.org or use the telephone or email that Sandy just mentioned. Okay, that's going to wrap things up for today's podcast. Boy, 50 episodes. That is just terrific. Thank you all out in the audience. And thanks to experts like Sandy for keeping this podcast going. It's a real pleasure to do. Don't forget to rate and review the HME Business Podcast. And please, if you haven't already, make sure to click the subscribe button so that you get every new episode. Remember, you keep listening and we'll keep posting. And if you want to stay on top of everything that's happening in the industry, make sure to check out hme-business.com and subscribe to eSource, our weekly e-newsletter service there. And if you haven't done so already, make sure to subscribe to the magazine there as well. You can get that in print or as a digital flip book. Again, that's hme-business.com. Of course, you can follow us on social media. We're at HME Business on Facebook and Twitter and LinkedIn. And I'm at Postacute News on Twitter. Lastly, if you have any feedback, suggestions, or requests, don't be afraid to reach out to me. Again, you can hit me up on Twitter at Postacute News, or you can email me at DKO, P as in Paul, F as in Franklin, at 1105media.com. Thank you all very much for listening. Thanks for sticking with us for 50 episodes. We'll keep covering compelling topics like the value-based HME. But for now, goodbye until the next HMEB podcast.